This is our 4th of July spectacular. We've been having a good time talking shop, talking design. We're going to shift focus from design to not that far out of the wheelhouse, architecture. And to do that, we're bringing in one of the best in the business here in Chicago. Writer for the Chicago Tribune, he's the architectural specialist, Blair Kamen. Blair, how are you?
Hey, Frank. Good. How are you? Happy 4th, almost.
Oh, exactly. How are you doing, man? I hope right now you're sitting in a hammock, sipping on a cocktail, if you drink, and just relaxing in this beautiful weather.
I was just playing tennis with my son and an exchange student from Germany, so I am currently very sweaty and exhausted, but otherwise, feeling just great.
Or that. That's good, too. I mean, that's amazing. At least you're out there enjoying it. Thanks for taking the time. I appreciate it. I know Sunday's a tough day for lots of people to break away.
It's my pleasure.
Hey, so let's talk about this article. I read it. I loved it. I'm a fan of Frank Lloyd Wright, as many out there are, and didn't know there was such a different twist to him. Like, how many times can you, talk about Frank Lloyd Wright in 12 different ways and still find something new? But you did.
Yeah. This story that you're talking about was prompted by a new exhibition about Frank Lloyd Wright. And the exhibition is at the Museum of Modern Art in New York. And the occasion for the exhibition is the 150th anniversary of Frank Lloyd Wright's birthday, which was June 8th. And the exhibition talks about some interesting, there's some just stuff we didn't know about Wright. Just for example, he at one point designed an innovative model school for African-American children that would have been sponsored by Julius Rosenwald, who was the one of the executives, the leaders of Sears Roebuck and Company.
Yeah.
There are many other things in the show that are fascinating, like Wright also designed a country club near Madison, Wisconsin, that included teepees, wigwams, and other forms of Native American imagery. And, some of the scholars in the show accuse him of cultural appropriation, that he kind of, took Native American forms with and used them in a kind of generic way rather than, focusing on the customs and culture of particular tribes. And then there are just really interesting things that have a lot to do with Chicago. For example, right in the late 1950s, unveiled plans for a mile-high skyscraper. This would have been a 528-story skyscraper. It would have housed government offices. It would have had room for helicopters, all kinds of stuff.
Crazy.
And it was never built. So the question is, like, why did Wright want to do this thing, this crazy stunt?
Yeah.
And part of the answer is that he was being challenged by Ludwig Mies van der Rohe, an upcoming, at the time, great German architect who was doing his own very innovative architecture in Chicago. And Wright sort of didn't want to be pushed aside, and so he, grabbed for the spotlight with this particular design.
Uncommissioned, was this a self-initiative that he did?
Absolutely, it was. He had no client. There was no site. Wanted a particular type of skyscraper that would have used a very deep foundation that would stick into the ground, kind of like the roots of a tree.
Mm-hmm.
He called it a taproot system. And in a way, this was his bid for posterity, a way of saying, hey, look, I'm the real visionary here, not this guy, Mies van der Rohe from Germany. As it turned out, I think Wright was wrong. Mises's skyscrapers have really been far more influential than Wright's. But Wright, nonetheless, is incredibly influential and incredibly innovative. One of the things I've been very privileged to cover in recent weeks is the renovation of Wright's, I should say the restoration of Wright's Unity Temple, which is a religious building in Oak Park, on Lake Street in Oak Park. And it is a masterpiece. This is a concrete building that was constructed shortly after the turn of the last century. And we think of Wright as a house architect, you know, doing all these prairie school houses.
Yeah.
But in Unity Temple, Wright created a religious structure that is really transcendent. It's this concrete cube. Light pours in from a skylight at the top. It's a U-shaped series of tiers of balconies that are very close to the pastor. So it really kind of has this feeling of this incredible intimacy and a space that really invites the congregation to be part of a community,
yeah.
a worshiping community. It's open for tours now, and if anyone's listening and they really want to see a great Frank Lloyd Wright building, I would say go to Unity Temple. The Frank Lloyd Wright Trust, which is a nonprofit that does Wright tours, is giving tours of the building. And, if you go to their website, you can find out tours and times. It's a masterpiece, and it's really worth a visit.
Blair, other than the obvious when you're talking Frank Lloyd Wright, what is the fascination? What is the public fascination with his design style? What do you think it is that made him so popular?
Wright, I think it's just the forms, the art itself. I mean, you know, you can talk about his personality. He was incredibly outlandish. He was always in debt. He had, a life marked by divorce and scandal and all this stuff. But all of that really would fade away if it weren't for his innovative architecture. And so what makes his architecture so interesting? Basically, I think that he just exploded all these conventions. You know, instead of Victorian houses that had all kinds of decoration on them and were cut up into tiny little rooms, it created houses where space flowed from one room to another.
Yeah.
And his houses were total works of art. That's the other thing that's fascinating about them. He worked with his clients to effectively design not just the exterior of the building, but the walls, the windows, the carpets. He would even design, if you can believe this, the dresses that women were supposed to wear in his house.
Wow.
And the story is that when he would stay over at the house of his clients for a night, he would get up in the morning and he would rearrange their furniture because he thought his way was better than their way. So he's a fascinating figure because on the one hand, he's a classic American figure. He is an individualist. His houses have a very individual stamp to them. They defied convention. Mm. So like, say, Ralph Waldo Emerson and other transcendentalists of the early 19th century, Wright believed in the power of the individual and the power of the individual to make connections with things that were spiritual and transcendent. On the other hand, there's a tension in his work because you could say that he's a bit of a dictator.
Mm.
He's telling people, whose house is it? Is it the client's house or is it more Frank Lloyd Wright's house?
Right.
And so he didn't like... He wanted to control everything along with his clients. He didn't just order them. I mean, they knew what they were getting into when they hired him. So, Wright didn't like it when people would come into his house and decorate it in a different way. Like, he called interior decorators interior desecrators.
That's nice, yeah.
The guy was just, he was a quote machine. He was incredibly clever. And he was really very ahead of his time. One of the interesting things about the Museum of Modern Art show is that it really reminds us how Wright, in the late years of his life, the 1950s, he died in 1959, used television to kind of broadcast his image to a wider audience. I mean, he appeared on What's My Line, the quiz show. And, the audience was clued in. What was his occupation? World famous architect. So,
would you parallel Blair him to a Walt Disney in a way? Like, is he the Walt Disney of architecture?
You know, certainly he's a Midwesterner who achieved great fame, as Disney did. I mean, you know, Disney, you know, was born in Chicago. His birthplace is in Chicago. Beyond that, I mean, I'm not sure about their
similarities. Well, I say that from the quote in your story in the Chicago Tribune, where he recites the passage. You know, he advocates for small town halls, which he calls little forums. And by what you're saying, by how he wants women to dress the way he would want them in their home, it almost sounds like this. Like he was trying to create the world of Frank Lloyd Wright. Almost like Walt Disney World. You know, to me, it sounds very similar in its story. And I think if Frank Lloyd Wright would have designed entire cities to function the way he thought would be the best way to function.
Oh, and in fact, he did. I mean, one of the parts about, you know, Wright actually designed a dispersed city called Broadacre City. It was a series of small farms, which he thought were perfect for democracy, as Thomas Jefferson did. It would have been connected, threaded together by a series of roads and occasional skyscrapers and commercial buildings. I mean, in some ways, it kind of anticipates the suburbia we have today, where suburbs like Schaumburg have, you know, tall buildings, and we don't have people living on farms, but we do have a kind of dispersed metropolis. So Wright absolutely was interested not only in the individual building, the house, or the skyscraper, but he was interested in the whole of the metropolis. And so there's so much rich writing and, you know, so many great letters and stories. And the great thing about the Museum of Modern Art show is that it's based on this archive of Wright's, all of his thousands and thousands of drawings and letters that was transferred from Wright's Taliesin compound in Arizona to the museum. And so the museum is going through, you know, this archive and trying to interpret Wright in new ways. And I think it's really a measure of Wright's staying power that, you know, 150 years after his birth, nearly 60 years after he died in 1959, he's still fascinating. We're still talking about him.
Will you ever see anybody reach that caliber in the world of architecture to be the next Frank Lloyd Wright? Is there any buzz out there for, like, this guy is it or that gal is it?
It's hard to say. I mean, I think that we are certainly in an era, or we have been in an era of star architects, also known as Starkitects. And so, you know, people like Helmut Jahn or Jeannie Gang have in some ways, you know, inherited that legacy of Wright's because they are media figures as well as, you know, architects and city planners as well as, you know, designing individual buildings.
Right.
At this point, though, I mean, Wright, I think it's fair to say, is the greatest American architect, even though he didn't design lots of finished skyscrapers. His buildings are, just extraordinary in their manipulation of space, the artistry of their decoration, their sculptural appearance.
They're just so recognizable. I mean, that's the bottom line, is you know when you're driving past a Frank Lloyd Wright, anybody, almost anybody, can go, oh, yeah, that's a Frank Lloyd Wright style home.
Absolutely. And his, you know, Falling Water, the great house in Pennsylvania that cantilevers over the waterfall is, you know, was named by the American Institute of Architects as the building of the century. And I think it still is. I mean, there's something about Wright's work that, you know, even though, say, the roofs leak or some people now consider the rooms too dark, there's a magic there that is fully three-dimensional and it's operatic, or it's like a symphony. It is a total work of art. Yeah. And you know, he was, you know, a crazy, wild figure, defying convention. And yet I think that's what makes him, he's an American original. And I think in a way it's very appropriate that we're talking about him on the weekend of July 4th, because he really is You know, you can't imagine Frank Lloyd Wright in any other country but the United States.
He's definitely a statement of America. And Blair, I thank you so much for taking the time out of your Sunday to come on our show and talk about architecture. Is this, do you know, is this a New York exposition going to be traveling? Will we see it here in Chicago anytime soon?
We won't, but it will be at the Museum of Modern Art through October 1st. There are other, what I would recommend is if you can't go to see the show, go to see a Wright building in Chicago. Go to see the Robie House at the University of Chicago, at the University of Chicago, or the Emil Bach House on North Sheridan Road. Go to see Unity Temple, or go to the Frank Lloyd Wright Home and Studio in Oak Park. I mean, architecture is a three-dimensional thing. It's one thing to see it on the pages of a newspaper or on an iPad. It's three-dimensional, though, and to experience it with the help of skillful docents who can really help explain it, I think is really the best way to, you know, to experience the magic of this great architect.
I second that, Blair. Thank you so much for coming on. Have a great Sunday. Did you win the tennis game, by the way?
No. Well, I don't think we want to go there.
Yeah, well, let's not go there.
The Frank Fontana Show.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back to the show, folks. I'm Frank Fontana, and we're turning it up because it's pate time here in the studio, kicking off our final half hour here. The taste of Chicago's coming on Wednesday, but the taste of Evanston is going on right now, right? We want to get on over there, and in studio, we have an array of samplings from the Taste of Chicago. Bill Glader is the marketing chief over at the Taste. How are you?
Pretty good, thanks.
Good to have you here in studio, and I say that because there's some good-looking stuff that I'm sampling and tasting so good. I just took a bite out of Jim's burger over here from Bat 17. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Let's go around and introduce the whole kit and caboodle. So I just introduced you to Bill from the Taste of Evanston.
Sean Decker from Sketchbook Brewing Company.
And I just tasted a beer. Sean, welcome anytime to the show. I appreciate it. Jim, burgers, killer.
Jim Pomerantz, owner at Bat 17 in Evanston.
And then on to the left of me, we got Woody Litton.
Yes, I'm Woody. I'm from Hearth Restaurant.
And you brought me some tuna.
Yes, ahi tuna poke.
Which poke is really popular right now, right?
Yeah, I learned it quite a few years ago from a chef in Hawaii named Sam Choi, so he kind of passed it on to me, and I've been doing it ever since. And now it's a huge crave here in Chicago, so I'm just running with it.
I can't wait to taste it. And all these fellows are here in the studio because they're part of this massive event that has started in Evanston called the Taste of Evanston. Bill, tell us about it.
So it's organized by the Evanston Lighthouse Rotary Club. And we started it 3 years ago, and it started kind of small, and it grew more last year, and this year it's even bigger. And it's going to be the best one for sure.
Where does it start and end in terms of the traffic flow?
Physically or
time? Yeah, like from what street to what street? And
it's at the Dawes House, which is a beautiful old mansion right on Lake Michigan. So it's on the corner of Greenwood and Sheridan Roads. And the event itself is going to be out on, there's a beautiful terrace just outside the mansion, but the mansion itself is going to be open for people that want to look around and check out all the cool antiques and stuff. And it was owned by the 30th Vice President of the United States.
Really? Which is?
Charles Gates Dawes is the guy's name.
He was a president?
Vice President.
Vice President.
Yeah, exactly. Under Coolidge.
And then similar to the Taste of Chicago, you've gathered all of the great restaurants in the surrounding area. And they're all there for the folks from anywhere in Chicagoland to come on over and get a taste of what Evanston offers in food. Now, I've eaten in a couple spots in Evanston. I don't think I've been to Bat 17, but I'm going to go back because that burger just knocked me on my feet. With such an eclectic group, where are you seeing most of the flow come from the surrounding areas? Is it just the heart of Evanston, or are you getting all of these people just coming to see what this little slice of north suburban Chicago is like?
Right. Most of the people that have bought tickets so far are from Evanston, but we're also getting people from around the other north suburbs and north side of Chicago. And
how many people attend in total?
We're expecting about 300 people this year. Maybe even up to 350 if you count all the volunteers and sponsors that get free tickets and stuff.
And after this show, it's going to go up to about 3,000 people. Are you ready for that kind of action? You guys better be making some more burgers and some more brews. Got some good stuff going on. We're going to continue this conversation. We do have to go to news shortly. Let's talk about some beer real quick first, though. Sketchbook Brewing Company, tell me about it.
So we started 3 years ago. We're kind of a great example of sort of artisan food and drink in Evanston, which people think of Chicago as a food town, but Evanston is also a food town. So
great
we have a small tap room. We serve a lot of kind of real traditional beers, you know, with a real emphasis on quality. And just to kind of get a sense of that, we just got named, Draft Magazine just named our IPA one of the top 20 in the country.
Now, which is that one of these that I'm drinking?
That's not one of those there. It's a different one. But all of our beers are really, really finely crafted, and we work with small batches. And so this sort of notion of artisan food is very much alive and well in Evanston. So,
dude, those beers are fantastic. Those are really good. I could see why you've gotten such a great accolade here. We're going to have to take a quick break. We're going to continue our conversation with A Taste of Evanston and learn more about some of the samplings you'll be getting if you go there. Real quick, what's the website?
Tasteofevanston.org.
The forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center, mostly sunny this afternoon, going up to a high of 89 degrees, low 69 tonight. There is a chance of showers and thunderstorms late this evening. Those may continue through tomorrow morning. Tomorrow's high, 76 degrees. Right now, it's 86 degrees at O'Hare, 85 at Midway, 86 in Elmhurst, and 85 along Chicago's lakefront. Get Chicago news first at the top of every hour. I'm Doma T. Pongo on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
And I just tasted a amazing tuna pokey. Is it, Woody?
That is correct.
And what restaurant is that from?
That's from Hearth Restaurant. We opened about a year and a half ago. We're in the Homestead Hotel. There's always been a history of different restaurants within that hotel, going back to Quince, Trio, Cafe Provençal. So we're just the latest addition. We're more approachable food now. More comfort, a lot of small plates.
Healthy
affordable.
Twist to them?
Not
so much.
My nickname is Butter Bob, so I got
Butter
a little
Bob.
Bit of health. But
are you the head chef as well?
Yes. I got a lot of gluten-free options, different things, so it's healthy in a way that you can find stuff. It's a big enough menu to, you know, what you're looking for.
I mean, is Evanston in general a, like, kind of healthy food destination or, you know, alternative food destination?
There's 230 restaurants in Evanston right now, so
wow.
You can find whatever you want.
You know, in my experience with and we're talking to a Joe Pomerantz from Bat 17. Jim, you said how many restaurants?
Last count was about 230, 240. That includes fast food. But,
wow.
It's exploding.
So, and that's inside the downtown area or in the surrounding area?
City limits.
City limits. How big is Evanston in general, Bill?
Population's about 70,000, I believe.
70,000?
Yeah.
It's a nice size. That's a lot of restaurants to accommodate only 70,000 people.
It Tell is. It's it. A foodie mecca.
Has it become really a destination for food?
Oh, definitely. Bill? Yeah. Yeah.
And why did you start, you know, the true essence of the Taste of Evanston?
Well, it came out of our Rotary Club, the Evanston Lighthouse Rotary Club. And we wanted to generate more money so we could give bigger grants to the community organizations that we support. And so that was the genesis of it.
So it's a fundraiser for charity and turns into right. a big to-do.
Yeah.
With tastings of beer, food. Is it literally like little stands that people can walk down the streets and just buy? Or the ticket covers all of the samplings?
Right. The ticket price gets you in the door, or actually onto the terrace, as it were, this time. And you get to sample whatever you'd like. And there's going to be 30 restaurants, two breweries, two wine shops that are going to have
one single location.
One location at this at the Dawes House.
At the mm-hmm. Dawes House. Okay,
yep.
So it's all taking place right there.
Right.
And you said that tickets can be purchased online. Can you purchase them in person?
Yeah, you could buy tickets at the door if there's any left. So,
and I'm assuming this house is big enough to fit more than 300 people.
Well, the house itself is. 300 people might be kind of tight, even in a mansion.
So the whole
like
property itself.
But the property, yeah. The event is actually on the terrace, and there's also a lower lawn that part of it's going to take place on. So
fancy. You can have music and stuff?
Oh, yeah. The music is going to be great. It's Alfonso Ponticelli and Swing Gitan. and they play gypsy jazz. And they're probably the best gypsy jazz band in the country. They're just great. Some of the people are coming to the event just to see
gypsy
them.
Jazz. What is that all about? Sounds fancy.
It's this. Jim's it's laughing really. It's really upbeat, virtuosic acoustic guitar, usually with violin and a bass, and sometimes percussion. And it's just really uplifting kind of music.
I like it just by the name itself, and I like it.
Yeah.
It sounds good.
Yeah.
I like jazz. I like Gypsy Kings. I'm thinking a mix between those things was probably what we're getting at here. And then as far as like alcohol, you're going to have full bar, then you obviously have a sketchbook here is going to be providing the beer, which is fabulous, Sean. I really, I just started getting into beer in the last like year or so. I'm a true diehard high-end tequila drinker.
Okay.
I'm self-admitted.
I got a high life tattoo, so I've been in the beer for a long time.
You've been in the beer business for a while. I got to just ask you, Woody.
Uh-oh.
One who has a Miller High Life tattoo on their shoulder.
I'm from Wisconsin. That's all I
mean,
I
do
say.
I need to say anything else? Right. Why and how and when is the question there.
It was in my 20s, and there was a lot of drinking, and now we're here.
Now we're here.
You're a chef. You got to have tattoos, and that's one of them that I should.
Can I see that again? But was it a bet, or did you just do it?
No, I chose this. I paid for this.
I chose this. I love that. I mean, listen, some people got gangster tattoos. You got a Miller Life tattoo. I mean, that's beautiful.
I assumed you had a girlfriend named Miller. I don't know.
Right?
Molly. Yeah.
Molly Miller. Yeah. That's awesome. Oh, gosh. Fun stuff, guys. Here? Where do you go from here? Let's go back to the food. Now, Jim, you brought some stuff from Bat 17. Tell us about Bat 17. And what's up with the name?
Bat 17 is an acronym for Benson Avenue Tavern. We're on Benson Avenue, 1700 block of Benson Avenue. This is our 11th year.
Are you a chef? Did you get in the business because of your?
This is the ninth restaurant I've owned in my life. I'm not a chef. The menu is pretty much from myself and my partner. This particular restaurant, we patterned the menu after a place in Ann Arbor, Michigan called Zingerman's. And then we expanded it to include burgers, which has brought us a lot of awards.
And you see that the burgers you bought are pretty much gone. I'm still working on my jalapeno burger over there. It's fantastic.
We get a lot of support from Northwestern. They vote on the best restaurant every year. Bat 17 has won the last 5 years in a row, so we appreciate that support from, the graduate schools, the undergrad, the faculty. They give us a lot of support. And Evanston is just growing, and,
My girlfriend's a teacher at Evanston High School, and they love Bat 17.
Oh, thanks.
So that's one of
Are they served in these mini slider types of burgers?
Oh, yeah.
And what if I wanted a big burger? You guys have a big
burger? Our signature burgers are 10 ounces.
10 ounces.
On a 5-inch brioche bun. And those have won awards, too. The sliders, which is what I brought here, we have about 13 different varieties of sliders. And our burger menu is, all kinds of crazy concoctions. But it's basically a 10-ounce burger base with a real big brioche bun that's made for us from Benison's Bakery in Evanston there.
And nine restaurants later, you must love the restaurant business. I mean, people usually stop after two or three.
Well, people ask me all that, oh, God, you must know everything there is. And my answer is simple. If I was that smart, I'd be on a ranch in Montana right now, retired. So,
but you keep hitting yourself over with a club and going, I gotta work.
So, it's what I know.
Yeah.
I know it well.
I mean, you're putting these together. Is Bat 17 kind of it for you? Are you think you're done after this?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But I've said that before, too.
Right.
We got real close to opening in Boulder last winter and just chose to wait another year.
It's great to hear that, guys like you are in towns like Evanston really making something happening. And for Sketchbook Brewery and for Hearth Restaurant, sounds like you guys are right on point. Sean, sounds like your beer is going to take off here and you might be the next sunshine story like Blue Moon or one of these big companies. Is the goal to get bought out by like Anheuser-Busch in like 5 years or 10 years?
Not for us. I mean, we're a local brewery. We're very committed to our community. Our tap room we see is a kind of a community center. No televisions in there. You know, it's a place for talking and conversation and tasting beer. And so we're really dedicated to our sort of local roots, our local nature.
Craft, yeah.
Craft, artisan production, local food production, sustainability. All of these things are things that we care about and our neighbors care about. So,
and do you feel like this trend, I mean, because I call it a trend because it's new, do you feel that this is here to stay in terms of craft beers and the artisanal beers?
I think that's what a lot of people right now who are into craft beers and artisanal beers are really interested in is localness.
Yeah.
I think, you know, big, large brands pretending to be craft beers, for instance, and things like
or
that.
Or buying up all of
or
the
buying
small
up
guys,
craft
yeah.
brands. You know, this is not what kind of people who really care about artisanal food, you know, want to see, and they're smart enough to understand the difference, I think. So we get a tremendous amount of support. We actually have memberships at our brewery. We call them CSB memberships. They're community-supported brewery, and we have 450 people who are members of the brewery.
Wow.
Get prepay for beer, get growler fills once a month, do special events, and that's
people
just
who take it serious.
Very seriously, and those are almost all local people. You know, yeah. These aren't people from the South Side or whatever. These are Evanston neighbors that are doing this. So
it's awesome to hear. And we're happy to support the Taste of Evanston. And Bill, why don't you one more time give the information where people can get tickets?
Sure. Tickets are at tasteofevanston.org. And one thing I don't know if I mentioned, there's three principal beneficiaries that we're supporting with this event. They all do training programs, job training programs for different populations. One is the No Boundaries training program, which teaches people with disabilities workplace skills. Another one is the Evanston Rebuilding Warehouse, which teaches deconstruction skills to people who are ex-offenders. It also keeps materials that would go into a landfill out of the landfill so they could be
that's
used
great.
In new construction.
And our taproom is built entirely out of their materials.
Oh, that's great.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I love to hear that.
And Evanston Work Ethic Program provides mentoring and assistance to high school students at ETHS, Evanston Township High School, who are interested in going into the skilled trades like culinary and automotive and things like that. So,
well, go support the Taste of Evanston for a good cause, as you hear. Gentlemen, thank you so much. And Woody, real quick before we go, I got a text here. My mother was the first head cook at Homestead Hotel for 32 years. At the time, my mother said it was the cleanest stainless steel state-of-the-art kitchen with a quadruple A rating. My mother was Edmonia Moss Julia. What is this? My mother, Edmonia Moss, Julia Child, and Jacques Pepin, the best and my favorites. I'm an excellent cook as well.
It's got a lot of history. I did not mention the Homestead Hotel because people usually don't bring that up, but that's
it's kind of cool to get a little hit. That's what we get here on WGN Radio.
Yeah.
Thank you, gentlemen. Have a great Taste of Evanston. Thanks for everything. Appreciate it. Welcome back to the show, folks. Time to get serious for just a second here. Lots of fireworks going off, and you want to leave it to the professionals. So we're bringing in a professional, Lieutenant Richard Olson from the Fire Prevention Bureau. Lieutenant, thank you so much for joining us here on the Frank Fontana Show. Just wanted to get some quick tips. I know some of it's common sense, but, you know, when you're playing with fire and fireworks, things can go wrong, right?
Absolutely, things can go wrong. Should leave fireworks for the experts. We know in Chicago and other parts of the country that's not always the case.
Yeah.
And either way, it should be left to adults. Children should never handle fireworks, matches, or anything of its kind.
So, you know, in terms of what fireworks would you say are acceptable for the youngins? Like sparklers, are they dangerous too?
Well, sparklers can be dangerous. I mean, I'm sure we all have experience with fireworks as kids. You can get burned with sparklers as well. But they are somewhat safe. But again, you got to use caution as with any source of fire or heat. You have to be cautious, especially children.
And how about those? Remember those snakes they used to sell? You put them on the floor, like a little black dot. You light them up, and then they kind of just foam out.
Yeah, I remember those. You don't see those too much anymore, but I remember those.
Yeah, I've been trying to find those, but those always were the safe things for me as a kid. Bottle rockets are always deceiving, too, because people think, it's just going to shoot away. But even those can be dangerous, right?
They can be dangerous. Not only can it, you can lose control, they can shoot into a person, maybe lose an eye. They can start a fire as well. I mean, it depends any situation. It could go into a window. It could do any number of things. So, yeah, they're not safe.
And give us a couple tips on what folks out there should be doing in terms of proper distance away. I mean, I always see people like taking M80s and throwing them at a garbage can. That's not a smart thing, right?
Oh, no, that's not safe at all. It's not smart. It's not safe. As far as the distance, I would have to say stay away as far as possible unless you're a professional. I don't think there is really a safe distance. Just stay far away. And let the professionals handle the fireworks.
And in the event of an incident, God forbid, where should people call first?
Absolutely, 911. Don't never hesitate to call 911. The fire department, the police department, we're here for your safety, to help you out. So never hesitate to call 911. That's what we're there for.
And do you guys up the ante around this time of year? Do you have more people ready to go?
We're always ready to go. We're always fully staffed. We've got several hundred members ready to go at all times, paramedics, firemen, and police officers as well, always ready to go. But I would have to say we're extra cautious this time of year because we know there's going to be some accidents, and we're going to do the best we can to prevent them and help people in their time of need.
Good to know that you guys will be on call. Lieutenant Richard Olson, thanks so much for the quick little update and tips. We appreciate your time.
All right. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
You too. So there you go, folks. Keep it safe out there, especially when you get your drink on, which Jenna's trying to do for us right now, right, Jenna?
Yes, I am.
All right. So you made some cocktails that are kind of our signature cocktails out there.
Right.
Tell us what you got.
Okay. So we'll start with yours first. So this one I named after you. It's called Frank's Tequila Stumble. So I know you are a big fan of tequila, and I tried to come up with the best concoction I could.
I just tasted it, by the way, and not because I like you. It is so good. What's in there?
So it's 2 ounces of tequila, 3/4 lime juice, 3/4 simple syrup. Shake it up with some mints in there. And then you just top it off with club soda.
Can you text that to me?
Yeah. And it'll also be on the Instagram stories. You can get all of the ingredients for any of these if anyone is interested. But think of that drink as a mojito and a margarita had a baby.
I think I know what Frank is planning this weekend if he wants that texted.
I'm having a mojito tequila baby is what I'm having.
Yes, you are. All right. And then the next one is going to be this one in our little mason jar. So it's called Grandma's Tea. So really simple. It's 2 ounces of Jack Daniels topped with lemonade and iced tea. And that's it. And
Which one is that one?
This one is the one in the mason jar.
Okay. And serve it in a mason jar, folks, because it looks really fancy. Like,
yeah.
Fancy in a kind of like country way.
It is. It's all about, I think, you just kind of like to look at it that way. And it feels better drinking it, if that makes sense.
I typically don't like Jack Daniels, but that's good.
I know.
Girl, you know how to swing some drinks.
I do. Like, it's in my blood. You know, people come from a long line of doctors and lawyers. I come from a long line of bartenders.
Right. And what else do we have? I see like a girl drink.
Yeah, these are two kind of, we'll call them feminine drinks. So this one is going to be a 4th of July sangria. Very easy. It's one bottle of dry champagne, one bottle of white wine. Throw in an ounce of simple syrup and an ounce of peach schnapps and apple juice, just one cup. And then you can add whatever kind you want. We have some raspberries.
My wife's a big fan of sangria.
Yeah. Raspberries, strawberries, blueberries.
That would be
apples.
A liquid dessert, I would call it.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Do you know what the calories in that one is?
Nope, and I don't care.
Yeah.
And last but not least, this one is my favorite. It is called a bubbly Georgia peach. So it's going to be 3/4 peach schnapps, 3/4 of peach simple syrup, and a dry champagne topped off.
Oh, Jenna.
I know.
That's naughty.
I know. But I would say if you're going to make this one, definitely stick with a dry champagne because the simple syrup and peach schnapps is already so sweet.
How much testing went into this drink concoction?
There were, I'd say, the Grandma's Tea and yours, I knew right away.
You did?
I did. I've made the Grandma's Tea before, and I really enjoy that. But the peach schnapps drink, the bubbly Georgia peach, took a little bit of time. I accidentally put peach vodka in that, and I'm just very happy we're not drinking it here because it was quite atrocious. I'm not going to lie.
I got to say, overall, if I was to give you a 5-star rating on all these, I would say all of them are 5-star.
There we go.
I'm not just saying that. I really. Where can people find your drinking skills and your? I'm sorry, your drink mixing skills.
My drinking skills. I mean, yeah,
slip.
We can call it drinking skills too if you want. You can get these kind of anywhere, but like my family bar, it's called Shinnick's Pub. It's in Bridgeport, right by White Sox Park. Yeah, we got a, my sister out there has got a Chinook shirt on right now.
Oh,
so
that's who was rocking it out
that's
there.
That's who
and
it
that
is,
dance
yeah.
was going. That dance was killer out
There's
there.
There's Taylor and Jill. Shout out,
What's
guys.
Up, Taylor and Jill?
But yeah, so you can get it there. Definitely at Chinook's
I thought that
pub.
Was just some randoms out our window. But
no,
that's your family.
That's my family. Those are my sisters.
Lots of fun.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Jenna. This was really good. I'm going to continue indulging here. This is the 4th of July weekend.